Blog Talk Radio.
Listeners, this is Carolyn A. Brent calling from caregiverstory.com, your Why Wait station. And I got to tell you, I'm always excited. I live a life of excitement. Why? Because I'm so blessed to meet some of the advocates around the world that really bring us very, very rich and enthralling information that's going to help us through our journey, not only if you're going to be a caregiver, which likelihood somebody's going to be a caregiver, even if you're caring for a goldfish, we are all caring for somebody. But either you're going to be a caregiver or you are a caregiver or you're post-caregiving, the bottom line is that we all need rich resources that's going to help us through this journey. So this evening, I'm calling from beautiful Florida, and I've got to tell you, it's been raining all day, but I tell you that it's still very, very beautiful. So if you're in London or if you're in California, wherever you are this evening, I have a special treat for you. My guest tonight, I actually met her on LinkedIn, and she is the creator and the inventor of something that we all need to know about, and that's activities for our parents, especially if they are in a private assistant living, if they live at home with you, or whatever the situation is. We want our parents to stay active. Why? That's going to keep them alive. I'm always saying, get your grandchildren involved with caregiving. Get everybody involved. Have the kids to read a book or plant flowers or fold clothes. But I have an expert that's going to show you how. Let me introduce to you someone that I'm proud of, and I keep telling her how proud I am of her because I did my own research to find out how many books are out there about that really talk about activities for our parents or parent who has Alzheimer's dementia. And I have the pleasure of introducing Judith A. Levy. Let me just give you a little information about Judith A. Levy. She has been a practicing occupational therapist for over 40 years. She now finds herself in a new role as a child of a parent with Alzheimer's dementia. In her book, she makes use of her personal as well as past work experience to provide support to others who find themselves in a similar situation, and we all know about the situations that we're in. I know that I still get telephone calls from around the world asking me for help, but now I could share with people that call me to call Judith, because Judith not only has the answers, but she has a book that you could actually pick up any place on Amazon, you name it. Her book is there, and guess what, folks? Her book is on the top 20. Literally top 20. They call it the top 100, but her book, last time I checked, it was number 20. That goes to show you people all over the country, they are picking up the content of this book because they need and we need help. Speaking of content, the content is not medical in orientation. Actually, the ideas are easily followed and cost outlay when needed is minimal. So please help me to welcome Judith A. Levy. Judith, thank you for being my guest. And I assure you, this show is going to fly by. And anyone out there, literally, if you want to call and speak with Judith, please call 909-362-8206 and press the number 1 when you're in the queue, and I'll know that you're raising your hand to ask Judith a question. Judith, thank you for being a guest.
Thank you, Carolyn. That was quite an introduction. I'm very excited to be here myself.
Well, I got to tell you, where were you, Judith, in 1997? I know that you are a former occupational therapist for 40 years, but I got to tell you, in 1997, I was looking for a person like you, and I had no idea that you did the work or you existed. So can you start at the ground zero, how you got into being an occupational therapist, first of all?
Oh, my goodness. I like to do arts and crafts, and my sister, who was a speech therapist, said to me, gee, I have a profession for you. You might like to do this. I had never been around anybody that was sick. I had never seen anybody sick, and I thought, oh, I could do arts and crafts. That would be fun. And then when I got into school, having been accepted to Boston University Sargent College, I found out what occupational therapy was, and I loved it. And I loved helping, and I loved seeing my patients get better. And I loved everything about it. It made me feel that I did something purposeful, and people got better because of what I did. So I did that forever. And I worked with children that had birth defects. I worked with learning disabled children to help get a camp program set up for them. I worked in a cerebral palsy center. I worked doing in a hospital doing adult rehab where I had stroke patients and hip fractures and knee fractures and shoulder fractures and elbow fractures and hand fractures. I did a lot of splinting. I did home care for a while. I taught the occupational therapy component of a nurse's aide training program. I guest lectured on child development at a local college, and I kind of did everything, and then my mother got dementia. So that kind of led into dementia. So I've done it all.
You have. Well, let me ask you this, because I know that in my case, I was in the pharmaceutical industry for 17 years, and of course, when Dad was diagnosed with dementia, I actually didn't believe the doctor. I was in denial. What was your, you know, experience when you were told that your mom had dementia? As a occupational therapist, were you in denial, or take us on that journey?
Well, I think when my mother got her diagnosis, it kind of put the puzzle together, because she had been forgetful. We had plans to go places with her, and she didn't come. She had plans to go with her friends, and she didn't appear. She missed birthdays. She missed anniversaries. She missed things. It never occurred to me that she had anything at all. So it really was a surprise, but then once I heard it, it kind of wasn't a surprise. Nobody in our family lived to be as long as my mother. My mother was diagnosed when she was 87, 88 years old, and she lived for another 10 years. She died 2 years ago at the age of 97. Nobody lived that old. So nobody had any kind of dementia or senility or senile dementia, whatever it was called. We were never exposed to it before. It didn't enter into my mind that it was anything that she had, because we hadn't experienced it. So when she was diagnosed, it kind of was a puzzle piece that fit together. So it's like, okay. And then the question was, well, where do you go from there? And I don't think I had denial as much as my mother had denial. And that was the biggest problem initially that we faced, that you know, like, everybody else is wrong and I'm perfect. And that was kind of what we had with that.
You know, I want to park there for a minute, because of what you do, I think you could really put some clarification on, they call it the resistant parent. You know what I'm saying? They're saying, well, my parent is resistant, although they have these issues and problems. So could you kind of elaborate on your expertise, especially with your mom, when everybody else is wrong? You know, can you help people walk people through how do you deal with a resistant parent when they do have the early stages of dementia?
The hardest part, I think, was the early stages. And I'm kind of like approaching it from two sides of the coin. I can approach it as a therapist, and I can try and remain objective if it's somebody else's parent. But when it's my parent, I'm not objective. I am completely subjective, and it's hurtful, and the whole thing is just kind of like, oh, my, you know, look at what's happening. And it's I didn't act as a therapist in response to my mother having dementia. I acted as a daughter, and there's a difference, the professional me versus the personal me. My mother was difficult, and I think that she wasn't so different. She was difficult anyhow. I mean, she was a difficult parent, and she was the parent who was right, and I was the child who should listen. And it's very difficult in that position to try and take control for your parents' actions and behaviors and things, because she wasn't willing to give up the independence to allow that to happen. And that's the difficulty with the initial stage, I think, of Alzheimer's or any kind of cognitive loss, is in the beginning, they don't want to hear it, and it's resistant. So my book, I don't think, is perfect for the person with newly diagnosed dementia, mild dementia, where the parent is going to be resistive to what you're going to do. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. You know what? That's absolutely clear. You're making it crystal clear. And the reason why I ask you that question is because you have the bigger picture, because you work with, really, you've seen all phases of it, from the early stages to, you know, the moderate, the whole thing. And a lot of folks, especially the 79 million baby boomers that I deal with all the time, and now I'm dealing with their millennial children and their Generation X children. So it's a big mess out there, because a lot of people are thinking that either the caregiver is crazy because they're telling their adult siblings, well, mom or dad or whoever the parent is, or both parents, they're doing these weird things, and half the people are in denial and some people make it on board. So that's why I wanted you to park there for a moment, because of your expertise as a therapist, but also I know that your book talks about the activities, and we're going to get to that. We're leading up to that for sure.
Okay. The thing that I find is that there's an awful lot of people that are parenting their parents from long distance. I live in New Jersey. My children live in California. They live in New York. If something goes on with us, they're not on premise in our face to actually see the changes. I find that if and I just heard a story about a couple who were supposedly wonderful children living in California. Their parents lived in Manhattan, very well-to-do people. The daughter had gotten a caregiver to take care of her parents. The parents got paranoid. Both of them had dementia. They fired the caregiver. They stopped buying food. They stopped cleaning. They stopped changing. And the daughter's in California and had no idea. Right. So sometimes what happens is when you get to holidays, and all of a sudden people are together and they hear, you know, you might have been complaining, Jane Smith might have been complaining that mom is not all there anymore, and I'm concerned about mom and some of mom's behavior has changed, that when the siblings get together, often at Christmas or Easter or whatever holiday you're celebrating, all of a sudden they can see it. And then it becomes, but you hopefully want to see it before it's a crisis.
Yes. Oh, my God. That's why I do these shows. This is my eighth year on Blog Talk Radio. And that, I mean, I'm so grateful, because we have kindred spirits. Here it is. Your mom passed away 2 years ago, and you still wrote a book to help other people. So I commend you for that, because that's what passion and that's what purpose is. And I'm going to blast your work all over the universe, because more people need to know about this. But continue on. We're talking about, okay, we talked about the initial stages of dementia. Let's go in and let's say that our loved one is living at home with us, or they're in private assisted living, or let's say a nursing home. I think, Judith, a lot of people are afraid, and I'm trying to break this barrier, because the most of the nursing homes that people will see, they see seniors kind of in a wheelchair, just kind of hung over with their necks down because of, you know, opioids or whatever, psychotropics or whatever their, you know, medications that they're on. But I know as a caregiver for my dad, I decided to participate, and I was the bingo caller. So I kind of forced my dad to sit there with me because I said, oh, Dad, I have a job here. I work here. I pretend like I had a job there. My job was a self-appointed job, is being the bingo caller every other night, because that was my way of trying to get Dad to participate. And he was a pastor, so he didn't believe in, you know, bingos or anything like that. But he sat there with me because he wanted to support me with the job, quote unquote, that I had. So tell us about activities. Kind of walk us through what we see, the seniors that's kind of like in a daze or maybe on the drugs versus the ones that are, you know, that are in places either at our home or at a long-term care facility where activities, how do we get our parents involved with that?
Okay. I'm going to break it down a little bit. If I'm going to start with somebody who, wherever somebody is found, if you're in a nursing home and you don't like it and you cannot like it and you can speak up on your parents' behalf, because if they can't make decisions, you are your parents' advocate and you're the one that it falls to make sure that the place is safe and that they're getting stimulation, that they're not being drugged, that you're not seeing a group of people sitting along a nurse's station in a vegetable position, not being stimulated at all. You have the right to speak up.
Yes.
And hopefully most people are overwhelmed with dealing with people that have dementia. They don't know what to do. You could have one nurse who's responsible for a ward of 25 people, and they need help. And so some of the reasons that my mother was fortunate, she was able to stay home, and we had full-time care for her at home. Not in my home, because that I didn't think that would work for my family, but she was fortunate to stay nearby. She was in a house with a caregiver. We sold the house. We moved her closer to us so that we would have better access to her, and we were nearby. My concern for activity is that the caregivers are trained, nurses, aides, nurses, are pretty much trained in what we call activities of daily living, and this is the therapist in me speaking. So an activity of daily living is eating, dressing, hygiene, toileting, self-care, the ability to feed and wash and bathe. That's all getting into activities of daily living. Activity, though, is how you spend your time that's not an ADL, activity of daily living. And I felt that the caregivers aren't really instructed in how to do with a person how to spend their time. They're too busy with the toileting and the eating and the feeding and the cleaning to get to the activity. So it falls to the family, or it falls to a social service person or a young group that might come in singing to provide activity which provides stimulation for the person who has cognitive loss. So if we want to take it for a grandchild with a grandma, or we want to take it for a brother who has dementia and you want to go in and visit your brother, it's how do you look at an activity? And that's so the reason that I wrote the book that I did is I felt that if you have caregiver A, Jane Smith, who comes in to take care of your mom or your dad or your whomever, and she's there from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4:30 in the afternoon, and at 4:30 she's had it. She's tired. She wants to go home. She doesn't want to see a sick person. She's had enough, and she wants to leave, and she leaves. Caregiver B, Jane Ellison, comes in, doesn't know what Jane Smith has done because there isn't a means to convey what the activity was that person did. And when somebody has cognitive loss, activity is, to me, the most important thing. So the book was a means to give an activity and then assess whether or not it worked. And that's the focus. That was so in a nursing home, if you have an idea that you want to play bingo, we'll go back to your dad and what you just said about your father. He wanted to sit next to you because he wanted to support you. And that's what I found.
Right.
Most people with cognitive dementia or whatever the reason that they have brain trauma, that's Lewy body, Huntington's, whatever it is that causes cognitive loss, your parent is still your parent. They still love you, and they still want to support you.
Mm-hmm.
So they may
yes.
not be able to succeed with what they're doing, but they really want to try for you. And
yes. Oh, yes.
That's kind of – so the activity, your dad wanted to be next to you for being a bingo caller, but he could have also handed you the bingo tile. He could have reached in and handed
he
it.
Did. Yeah.
Okay, but that's
yes,
an activity.
He
could put
yeah,
it on
okay.
the number and match the number B1 to B1 on the card. That's an activity.
Yes.
So
yes.
when,
yes.
when
that's
you
powerful.
Start to, yes. When you start to look at an activity, you break it down. Does it work? Does it not work? How much lighting do you need? Is your father in a wheelchair? Do you have to bring the wheelchair? Does his feet reach the floor? Can he get close enough to the
right.
table? So you start to assess whether the activity is appropriate for your parent or your loved one or your client.
Right, right, right.
That was a whole bunch
wow,
of stuff.
That's powerful, powerful. Can you kind of walk us through some of the chapters in your book? And the reason
sure.
why I asked that, I have not had an opportunity to read your book yet, and I plan to, but can you walk us through it, please? I really
sure.
would appreciate that.
Okay. I'm going to tell you that I list about 50 different activities or more in the front of the book. And, the first thing I do is I talk about medical concerns and things that you should check for with your parent. And I'm a big believer in having notes when you go in to see the doctor, that you write down all your questions
yes.
and you make sure that you get your questions answered. And in a lot of cases, I like people to take a tape recorder after getting permission from the doctor and taping the meeting. So that later, if you're one child and you go home and your brother calls you up and say, well, what did the doctor say? You can relay it
mm-hmm.
without being wrong. Because
wow.
when you're there with the doctor, you don't hear it. It just
right.
kind of goes right off the top of your head. The next thing that I get into is once medical things are taken into consideration, it gets into how you set up an activity. Again, that's kind of where you're sitting, what time of day. Is your parent interested in what you're doing? If it's something, if your parent hates writing and you want to do writing and they always hated writing, don't do it. But the aide may not
yes.
know that. So you need to write it down so that they have something to go to. So you're not reinventing the wheel each time somebody else comes in to be with your parent. So
right.
then I get into activities, and I started with the alphabet, and that's one of the examples. There are sample pages on Amazon that show samples of some of them, and one of them I did with my mother. She was very, very big on language and words. She liked Latin. She always did the New York Times crossword puzzle, and we would sing the alphabet song, and when she would get, I had letters. I don't know if you've seen the children letters that go, they're magnetic, the colored letters that go
yep,
on the refrigerator.
Yes.
Okay, well, I love
yes.
them. And we would make words out of them. And we would stick them on the wall and onto the any magnetic surface to make letters, make into words.
Wow.
We would do them by color. We would sort them by color. We would put them into capital letters or lowercase letters. We would make words. So if I said to her, Mom, here's the alphabet. Take out all the green ones first. And she would take out all the green ones. I said, okay, let's see if we can make a word with the letters that are green. And initially we could. And then I would say, okay, let's make a word that starts with the letter A. And she would go, apple. I said, fantastic. And everything was fantastic. Everything was great. Good job.
Yeah.
Nice job. Give a hug. Give
yeah.
a shake. Give a high five.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we would go to B. And when we would get to the next letter and she couldn't say it, like the letter H, we would start to go back to the alphabet song and we would sing A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And then I'd stop and she'd get the next letter and we would continue on.
Oh,
and so
wow.
we would use music that was from when she was young and incorporated yes. the activity. And
wow.
she was remarkable. So we would do fruit. Tell me, Mom, give me a fruit that's blue. And she would give me blueberry. Give me a fruit that's red. And she and so there were lots of things that we could do, but I got off of the alphabet. And when it was when we were done with the alphabet, and I was done with the letters and the blocks, and we had sorted them or done whatever we had done, I had her put them back into the container alphabetically. And then it was put away, and it was cleaned up, and she was really pleased with herself because she completed an activity.
That is, you know why? That is amazing, and it's fantastic. And the reason why I want to kind of park here for a moment, because a lot of seniors, when they feel like they have nothing to live for, because you said something really, really key. You said just because they have dementia doesn't mean that they don't love you or they're not thinking. My father, to me, was the smartest person with dementia that I had ever met, because the doctor would ask my dad, he would say, Dr. Brett, what's today's date? And my father, instead of answering the question, because Dad didn't know what day it was, he'd say, well, you're the doctor. Don't you know what day it is? And
yeah.
I just kind of laughed, going like, that's pretty smart, because he was smart enough to kind of turn it into a joke, because he knew he couldn't answer the question, but he was smart enough to answer it the way that he wanted to. So
absolutely.
I love the way that you're bringing into kind of starting from ground zero. That's what we do with kids. You know, when we're teaching them the alphabet and teaching them about colors, we get them involved. And I got to tell you, that's very powerful. That's why your book is rated so high on Amazon. I got to tell you that, because there's nothing like your book. But let's continue. This is exciting.
Well, the thing that I found is, and I said it in the book, that Alzheimer's is an onion disease, and it peels off layers and layers and layers of your parent until it gets down to the very nub, the very middle. And it's the thing that that the doctor said, if he asked your father a specific what's the date today, some of it is that the doctors are doing it to question, you know, the competency that somebody has. But otherwise, that once they know that somebody really doesn't have a sense of time, they've lost a sense of time, that's kind of like a difficult question. I remember one time I asked, I did something, and I know I shouldn't have done it. I said to my mother, do you know who I am? And I should never have done it. And
tell us why.
I wanted her to
know
me.
Tell us. Okay.
But she didn't know who I was, and she looked at me, and she tried, and she says to me, you're a relative. And I said, you're right, I am a relative. And then my caregiver was looking at me, giving me daggers, because I was so stupid to have asked a specific question like that, that was, like, unfair. But I really wanted my mother to know who I was. I said, so do you know who I am? She says, I think you're my aunt. And I said, you're right, 100%. And I just, oh, my, it was one of those hard days. Dementia's hard.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
It's
I got
to
tell you, Judith, to this day, I got to tell you, I'm being audited by the IRS. So I'm digging around and looking for, you know, I've always kept all my papers. So I'm from the generation where you just keep your records for forever. And I ran across something my father had colored in one of his activities, a bird. And I cried like a baby when I saw it. This is just last week, because I thought, wow, Dad made this bird, this beautiful bird, and gave it to me as though a child would give a parent, like, look, Mommy, look what I made for you today. And I saw that to this day, and it breaks my heart. But you know what? That's what keeps me having radio shows, having guests like you on, because, you know, we're here for a reason. This is my purpose, to help other folks. But I have to divert to that. But, yeah, keep going.
No, that's wonderful.
This is really beautiful.
What we had done with one of the other things I had done with my mother that reminded me of is I got a children's coloring book, and that's one of my activities. I really like children's coloring books. They're coloring now is like the thing. It's all over the place. If you go into any Hallmark store anywhere, you're going to see adult coloring books. They're beautiful. They're too detailed. They're never for somebody who has cognitive loss. It's just too much, too many lines and designs, and it's not going to work. You need a child's coloring book. It has simple, clean pictures of easily found objects. And
yes,
it's a perfect thing to have. So we would take coloring, we would take crayons, and I'm partial to Melissa and Doug triangular-shaped crayons because they don't roll off the table and they don't have that waxy, you know, that yucky feeling that crayons can get when
yes.
they get old. They're hard. The colors are really beautiful. And we would color, and then we would tape it to the wall. She would sign it, and we would discuss what it was and what kind of colors she wanted to use. And then she would sign her name, and we would put it on the wall. And the next time we went back, so we had a whole wall of her coloring.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
It was wonderful. And the aide was thrilled because it was something else for her to discuss with my mother. And it was
yes.
something that my mother did. So she was proud
wow.
of her accomplishment. So that's another activity.
Yeah.
So that's one of the other things in there. So I have things that go from blowing bubbles to bingo to going to the beauty parlor to music. Music is one of the last things lost.
Yes.
That's why the alphabet singing is pretty good. Someone had said to me when I was talking about my book at one point, they said, oh, well, all your activities are for women, and they're really not.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, well, give me an activity that's for a man. My father likes to go to Yankee baseball game. If you're in London, I don't know what the comparable thing is for Yankee baseball in London, but baseball games. And to take their father to the baseball game would have been an overwhelming
yes.
experience. But to take
yes.
the father to a children's t-ball game or to a children's elementary little league game would be fine.
Right.
Because
yes.
it's local and it's social and it's not far and it isn't as overwhelming as a professional baseball game. So there's still
right.
things to do for men that are male-oriented that are out there if somebody wants to ask me a question. The other thing that
no,
someone
one
had
other
asked,
question. Oh, oh.
Sure, no?
Okay, no, keep going. Yeah, keep going.
I had met a nurse, and she told me that
mm-hmm.
she wanted to have a catch with her mother. And she's a nurse. She wanted to have a catch with her mother, and each time that she threw the ball to her mother squinted and dropped the ball. So
mm-hmm.
you had to... This is where you get into looking at it. Why was she squinting? Was she afraid? Did the ball come at her too fast? Was the ball too hard? Was the ball something she couldn't focus on? Did she lose her balance when she went to catch the ball? So one of the things that I suggested to her was to use a helium balloon to play catch with a helium balloon or to use a beach
oh.
ball and to sit down and roll it across the table to her mother, and it would give her mother more time to focus on the ball to catch it. So you can look at it. If it's not working, try to step back and think, well, why isn't it working? And see how you can
okay.
change it. That's the therapist. That's the therapist coming out of me.
Well, that's good. I mean, I'm so honored that I have a real-life therapist coming out because we as advocates for our parents, we've got to play that therapeutic role too. So my next question is, for the adult child that finds themselves in the role of trying to do activities with the parents, because, you know, we have to do that, what's your recommendation in regards to, like, educating someone on patience? And the reason why I say that, the baby boomers, many of them are still working. They're working up in age. They're like 67 years old and still working. I know 70-year-olds that are working. So if they're still working and their parents are living longer, I had a gentleman that called right before you had contacted the show, and he's 77 years old, and he may be calling back. He buried his mom that just died last year at the age of 103. So there's a lot of 100-plus folks running around, but the baby boomers are not really in that great of shape, too. How do you balance? Give us some advice on that.
Oh, boy. Sometimes I had patience,
That's
and sometimes
yeah.
I didn't have patience.
Okay.
I think the biggest thing to realize is that you're allowed to not have patience, and that there's nothing wrong with you for not having patience. What you need is a support system that will cover you when you don't have the patience to be with your loved one or client, so that there's somebody else that's sharing the burden with you. I used to go in the car after I saw my mother and I would scream. I would scream because it was like, it can last forever. You know, you have no way of knowing, and it's overwhelming because the person that you're dealing with is no longer the person that you knew. And I think the hard thing with caregivers is that if you have a caregiver caring for your parent, they only know your parent as they are today. They don't know your parent as you knew your parent. So, one, it's frustrating that they're not quite sure what, you know, how you're viewing them. I mean, sometimes my mom was difficult. When she got dementia, she was just lovely. They couldn't believe how we thought, oh, my God, she's so tough. And for them, she was just wonderful. You know, it was completely different personality. You could also have a parent that was an absolute gem who has turned into a cursing, screaming, throwing food, biting furniture kicker. And that's another thing, too. So a lot of it, behavior and how you have the patience to deal with your parent can be related to medicine that they're on. And it's possible that they're on the wrong medicine. They could be allergic to it. It could be that they're eating something that doesn't agree with them. They could have a urinary tract infection. They could have a vitamin deficiency. Their hearing could be off. Their vision could be off. So they may not be able to ask the question, but some of your patients may go because your parent isn't acting the way that you think they should be acting. So, again, you kind of have to step back and look at it medically before you you get crazy about it.
Well, you
I
know
found...
what really helped me? Oh, go on.
Go
Sorry.
Ahead.
No, I was going to share the in order. I was one of eight adult siblings at that time. And I was the only one caring for my dad. Everyone else was too busy. And what I did, Judith, I had to wrap my arms around myself and sit and pray to God, dear God, help me to get through this. So I had a lot of doctors around the country because at the time I was a clinical education manager. So what I did, I really would hone in and go to all of the national like Alzheimer's meetings that they would, you know, that they would actually go to. I would actually attend and learn all that I could. And then finally, after maybe 3 years of just getting the support I needed from the medical professions, I was able to look at my father, the dementia truly as the disease and separate it from my dad.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense? I was able to, like, literally go, when dad attacked me in the middle of the night or attacking someone, in the, a stranger in the house that he thought was there, I knew it was the disease, and I didn't, and I knew also knew that it wasn't my dad, it was the disease, so we had to switch medications. Dad, there was six men that had to hold dad down when I had to do a 72-hour hold? I forgot the name of it. When they keep a person for 72 hours to evaluate them, my father was attacking, like, it took six men to hold him down because they said he was stronger than the Incredible Hulk, but that was the disease, not my dad. So I share all these things, and the reason why this is part of the show that I'm talking about it, because a lot of people don't realize how deep it goes when a person has dementia. Yes, activities is going to keep them, it's going to keep them busy. It's going to help them to stay as normal as we could possibly have them. But this is a very, very tough subject, and it's a tough, tough disease. It's probably the toughest disease I've ever had to deal with.
It's awful. It's awful because it just robs you of who you are. And the difficulty is exactly what you said, that you had a parent who got attacked. He got attacked by a disease that changed his personality. And but part of what it is if you step back a little bit, you need friends. You need people that are willing to help you and spell you. If somebody says, "Can I do something for you?" say yes. and give something specific for someone to do. People really want to help, but they don't know how. And the biggest thing is that you have to ask for help, because there are a lot of people that don't want to be near somebody that's got it. It's almost like it's a catching disease when it's not. And ask for help. I can't do this.
Absolutely.
I will not do this.
Yes.
I can't. I just can't do that. And you are allowed to not be able to do it unless you can't not be allowed to do it, in which case you really need to have a support structure, because this is an overwhelming long-term illness. And sometimes it's the medication. Don't assume if a doctor gives you Aricept. I'm going to use Aricept because it's coming to mind. My mother had horrible nightmares and behavior issues on Aricept. And that was her personal reaction. I'm not saying anything against Aricept. It's wonderful for some people. It was not wonderful for my mother. But what we did is we said to the doctor, this medication is not working. Help.
Yes.
And some of it is, it's not always the disease. Sometimes it's the medication. And
sometimes there's
other medications that are available. Question the doctor. You're allowed to question the doctor. And
you know what? I got to tell you, knowledge is power. I'm so thankful, Judith, that you are bringing that up, because I know that it was a fight till the end for me with my dad, because I started being a caregiver in the 90s, the late 90s, and I ended up just a battle all the way. So things have really, really changed a lot. But I appreciate you sharing what people need to do, because they need to do it. Now, we have 18 minutes, so I'm going to put a shout out. If anyone wants to speak with Judith, please call area code 909-362-8206 and press the number 1. And there was a caller. Guy, are you on the phone? Guy? Okay, he must have hung up. Oh, Guy. Hello, Guy. Guy, you know what? How are you, Guy?
I'm fine. I'm mean and ornery. I'm from Maine.
Okay. Well, Guy, this right here is Judith. She is an author that wrote an amazing book called Activities to Do with Your Parents Who Has Alzheimer's Disease, period. You know, and she is a phenomenal guest. I was sharing that you were taking care of your mom and your sister. Do you have a question for Judith?
No, I think that I was able to work it through with my family, with doctors, and things worked out okay.
Well,
that's
could you
great.
Tell everybody how old your mom was when your mom, before she passed? You were a caregiver at the age of 70, what? How old were you at the age of
70? I was about 74, 73, and my mother passed away just a few months before her 101st birthday.
Wow. She had a long
life.
But
she was sharp. Yeah, she was sharp as a tack. She was a college professor for most of her life, and sharp, very, very astute.
So let me ask you a question. Well, Guy, let me ask you a question. Is there any activities you did with your mom that you could share with the world, being 74 years old and taking care of a 100-year-old? That's pretty incredible.
Well, she liked literature. She liked conversation, discussing the literature, the books she was reading. And that's one of the ways she kept bright. She was never senile. She was never with Alzheimer's. But she just eventually got tired.
Well, a lot of us get tired, so that I can understand that. Judith, do you have a question for Guy, a 77-year-old, or any wisdom that you guys want to share as advocates for elders and caregivers?
I think that you are truly fortunate that your mom lived as long as she did in as good health and cognition as she was. You're very fortunate. One of the things
she was sharp as a tack, I'll tell you. Dangerous.
Well, that bodes well for you, doesn't it? That's great.
Yeah, when we were kids, we could never get away with lying to her. It didn't work.
Did you have siblings that helped take care of your mom? Or
did
was
you
it all? Did you have brothers and sisters to help take care of your mom, or was it you?
I had a brother and a sister, yes. And my sister lived in the same town that my mother did, Canton, Ohio. And I was there. And we both enjoyed her last couple of years.
I think you're very
fortunate.
She was
a joy.
That is very fortunate. Yeah. So, Guy, I'm going to put you on hold, or just mute your phone. I still want to ask Judith more questions. Do you have another question for Judith, Guy, before we put you on mute?
Judith, are you the lady I met today in the library?
No. I'm Carolyn. Judith actually is in New Jersey.
Hello, New Jersey.
I'm sorry?
I lived in New Jersey 100 years ago.
100 years? Well, it could be if your mom lived to be 101 almost. you could be in New Jersey, too. Is there any question that you have for me?
No, I think you're doing very, very good work. I'm very impressed.
Oh, well, thank
you. And that's what I have to say.
Thank you for calling in, Guy. So, Guy, kindly mute your phone so I could finish my radio show with Judith. But thank you so much for calling in. Just mute your phone so we don't have any distractions, okay? Thank you, Guy.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, bye. Your phone. Okay. Well, Judith, what can I say? We have people calling in. I met a guy at the library today, and he's 77 years old, and he worked as a forensic accountant in pharmaceuticals for taxes. So for 56 years, he's worked in the pharmaceutical industry. So that is very, very impressive. And I really, really enjoy talking to seniors that keep their minds busy and occupied. And a lot of seniors out there go to the library. That's a great place to go. Judith, I have a question for you in regards to baby boomers. My question is, do you have any advice? I know that your advice is what do we do with our parents, activities for our parents, but do you have any advice with baby boomers? Because baby boomers are getting up there at age, at the high end, they're 70 years old. And a lot of them, after they have been a caregiver forever, they have no idea who they are, what they like, activities, you name it. It's like they don't have their identities anymore. Do you have any advice as to how a caregiver could get their life back after giving their
after
life
caring.
To a loved one? Yeah.
I think some of it is you need decompression time. If you've been a carer for your parent for any number of years, it's emotionally draining, and you still need to work through it and then kind of realize that you were good. And congratulations to yourself for doing a job well done. The one thing that I will say for, I guess, everybody is that you should have some idea for yourself what to do in terms of your own medical care. And that one of the things that my mother didn't do that I wish she had done is she had done an advance directive, but she really didn't tell me what kind of care she wanted for herself, other than her comment was, I don't want to die in a nursing home. My answer to my mother was, I'll do the best I can for as long as I can. So I didn't want to feel guilty because I could or I couldn't live up to the expectations that she had, that she wanted to put on me. I could only do what I was capable of doing and financially capable and emotionally capable of doing. But I think it behooves all of us to get our paperwork in order. And I'll go back to where we started with the initial mild Alzheimer cognitive loss person. That's the time to get your paperwork in place, to know who the lawyer is, to know power of attorney, who's responsible, to get your papers in order so that your children are not making decisions for you, you're making your own decisions. And I think that that's kind of a baby boomer thing to be concerned about. You have to pay attention, as much as you don't want to the paperwork, because otherwise you're at somebody else's whim of what's going to happen to you in your care.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, Judith, I actually take it a step further in all the work that I do, especially when I'm doing platform speaking, because I do speak for AARP. I share, start the conversation at the age of 18 or 21 with your loved ones, literally, because that's basically why you'll see me lying on the beach, because my father had the crucial conversation with me when I was 18 years old about end of life, and he used a bird to share the story about end of life. So that's where my work comes in. But what I really, really want to share with the world, if they go to agingwithdignity.org, it's the five wishes, and that just makes it so easy in regards to what are your five wishes as far as end of life. And if a person approaches it at that level very, very easy, I believe everyone should have their five wishes in order, which is just their end-of-life legal paperwork, because
right.
Nowadays people are living longer, and also people are dying younger, and I'm speaking of young people in their 20s and 30s and women with breast cancer at the age of 40, and they're dying at all ages. So I believe personally, my story is you got to get all of your documents together, have the crucial conversation while people are healthy, just like you mentioned. And I got to tell you, we only have 8 minutes left, and I am so honored again to have you. Let people know how to get in contact with you. Tell them about your website, how to get in contact with you. Do you do any one-on-one coaching? Because I have people asking me all the time, Carolyn, can you coach me? The answer is no, I don't coach. But let me ask you, do you do any one-on-one coaching for people?
No, what I've been doing
okay.
is I, as a therapist, when I was working, it was one-on-one. Now what I prefer to do is to teach to a group. I mean, I'm very excited to be on the radio with you. This is, it really has flown. I've gone to places nearby me with the United Way, and I've spoken to groups of people there. I've gone to families at a local nursing home where they have family support groups, and I've spoken with the families on what kind of activity to do with their parent in a nursing home. Pretty much what I'd like to do, and I'm speaking to agencies that provide caregivers to train the caregivers. So I want to be as effective as I can be to a group of people at a time.
Yeah.
And hopefully
I got you.
People
I hear you.
Will get questions from each other and feed off of each other. I haven't been doing specific one-on-one at this point, no. In answer about the book, it's available on Amazon, and it's also available online at Barnes & Noble. That's the two places. It's in the Kindle version.
And also, let's stop you. I got to stop you. Do you know that you're in the book club on caregiverstory.com? I have to make a formal announcement on that in writing and blast it off. We're welcoming you to our book club, and thank you so much for allowing us to showcase your work on caregiverstory.com.
I thought I was so excited. It's like to my husband and my children, wow, look at that. The book's on her site. That's so cool. I would get up in the morning and pound the keys to do this, and it's so exciting that it's a book. It's my lemonade from lemons, and it's just, it's very exciting. It's exciting.
Oh,
but
I'm
it's on Amazon.
I'm excited
and it,
for you. Yes.
Thanks. And I can be reached if you want to send me an email. I will answer at dementiaactivities@gmail.com. That's got two A's in the middle. dementiaactivities@gmail.com. And I answer things. I'm pretty good at answering. And I'm also on LinkedIn.
You're on LinkedIn. Now, you're also on Facebook. Tell us about your Facebook account.
No, the book is on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook because it intimidates me, but the book is on Facebook. So I will tell you that I'm old and my daughter handles the Facebook page, but yes.
Okay, but tell people how to find it on Facebook. Otherwise, you're not going to know how to find it.
You go to Activities to Do with Your Parent Who Has Alzheimer's Dementia, and it will come up on Facebook. Or you can go to my name, Judith A. Levy, and my initials are EDM. I have a master's in education, OTR. I'm a registered occupational therapist. But if you type in the name of the book, Activities to Do with Your Parent Who Has Alzheimer's Dementia, it'll come up on Facebook, it'll come up on LinkedIn, it'll come up online if you Google it. And
oh, you're
it'll come up on your
and
site,
I gotta tell
Carolyn.
The world, everybody, but her book, when I say is at the top 20, I'm bragging on that. I've never made it up to the top 20. I've been on the top 100 list for almost 2 years, but the top 20, that's powerful. And once again, I do my research. I couldn't find any other books specifically for activities. She is the creator, the owner, the person that this, I believe this is her ministry and her mission, because look at the rich beginning that she had as far as how her sister got her involved and how just that whole, that's why I wanted to know, like, how did she get here? Always remember, world, when a person has a passion and when a person has a purpose in life, there's a whole 40, 50 years that's brought them to where they are. So get on board, get the book, the activities to do with your parent who has Alzheimer's dementia by Judith Levy. And I got to tell you, I'm so honored to have her on my show, coming from caregiverstory.com, your Why Wait station. Stay tuned for Andrew Mandia. He's going to be on your show. CaregiverStory.com, your Why Wait station. Yes, ma'am, Judith.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Judith. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.